available on digital media, iTunes podcast, smartphone apps, and from the online website. This is Outlook, the talking newspaper for Coventry.
Hello and welcome to Outlook, and me, Nigel Hewin, and this week's edition is being recorded on Wednesday the 25th of February 2026. And well, what's coming up in this edition? Well, to start off with, Elaine is going to visit Radford Semele, and then we'll find out what it's like to live with deaf parents. Many of you will know the Medal Man in Antiques Roadshow. Well, there's an article about him and the book you're reading about his father's fascinating wartime experiences. And also talking about television, we're going back to John Logie Baird's first demonstration of television just 100 years ago. Staying again with television, this is Strictly Come Dancing. One of the professional dancers there is saying what his future is in Strictly and why he's not going to move back to Spain again. But all that, of course, is with the sport and postbag and the report from Hugh is in a minute. But first, we're going to start off with local news with Elaine and Peter.
Outlook News.
West Midlands Railway has been awarded the top prize of Train Operator of the Year at the 2026 Rail Business Awards. The accolade follows a milestone period for WMR and its sister brand, London North Western Railway, as its £1 billion investment into new trains and infrastructure comes to fruition. The sister brands introduced three new fleets in recent years, increasing capacity on its services by 40% and improving journeys for more than 1 million passengers every week. A key part of this programme includes WMR's introduction of the Class 730/0 electric trains to popular routes such as the Cross City Line, the busiest commuter route outside of London. The spacious trains feature intelligent air conditioning, improved accessibility features and power points at every seat. Since their introduction, figures show customer satisfaction has risen by 19%. Significant investment has also been made into the company's train depots. Facilities in Birmingham, Coventry, Worcester and Shrewsbury have been modernised, including a £70 million investment into Birmingham's Tyseley depot. Ian McConnell, Managing Director at WMR, said, "We are extremely proud to win Train Operator of the Year. This award is testament to the hard work of colleagues across our business, who have successfully introduced three new train fleets and future-proofed our train depots, while continuing to keep passengers moving every day. It's been a tremendous team effort, so it's fantastic to be recognised for our achievements over the past year." The investment programme has driven significant passenger growth. A recent report from the Office of Railroad showed a massive 12% year-on-year increase in the number of people using the sister operator's services in the first quarter of 2025 to 2026, equating to more than 2 million extra journeys. "The government wants to bring the whole railway together under one brand with one mission: to deliver for passengers. The brand aims to create a more unified railway, putting customers first, making the experience better for passengers, improving reliability, and having simpler rail fares and ticketing."
A rugby stadium in Coventry has been renamed in honour of a man who had a significant influence on the club and on his home city. Nearly a year after director Nick Newbold died, aged 62, Coventry Rugby Club's Butts Park Arena was renamed ahead of its home game against Hartbury on Friday, which they won 31-19. It will now be known as the Nick Newbold Stadium, where he worked for 17 years. He was also chair of trustees at Sky Blues in the Community, the charity of Coventry City Football Club, and helped many other groups. Coventry Rugby Club Executive Chairman John Sharp said that renaming the ground was a fitting tribute to the lifelong supporter. Mr. Sharp said Mr. Newbold loved the city of Coventry and did much for the community. He was also a member of Acorn's Coventry fundraising group in aid of Acorn Children's Hospice and other community sports teams. Mr. Sharp said, "Nick dedicated himself very much to what was going on and those children in the hospice. I knew Nick from when he just finished school," he continued, "and I was vice chair of the Old Wheatlands Rugby Club when Nick came along to play. He was always up to mischief and no good, but always had a smile on his face, and he was such a well-loved character. An entire day of events is planned to mark the renaming ceremony, which will take place on the 21st of March when the team plays Doncaster Knights in the Champ Rugby Division. There will be a blue plaque and former England players are expected to attend, along with the possibility of some of the celebrities who Nick knew through his charity work."
Police horses reintroduced to the West Midlands beat after a 26-year absence have spent their first weeks back on duty helping to search for missing children, tackling drug dealing and patrolling busy city centres. West Midlands Police said its mounted unit had been active across the region since the start of December, including operations in Walsall, Sandwell, Birmingham, Wolverhampton and Coventry. Other duties have included assisting a crackdown on illegal electric bike riding and policing football matches. Sergeant Alex Hadley said the public's reaction had been overwhelmingly positive. "People's response to us has been phenomenal," he said. "They've been so happy to see the horses and to speak to our officers who've been explaining the ways in which we'll be using the horses in their area." He said officers had also spoken to hundreds of motorists about how to respond safely when encountering horses on the road. Drivers are required to slow to 10 miles per hour, leave at least 2 metres when overtaking, and follow instructions given by mounted officers. Sergeant Hadley said many drivers locally were unfamiliar with seeing horses on the road. "Our aim is to engage and educate drivers first, but we will always enforce the law when safety is compromised," he said. The unit has also worked with bus companies and council vehicle drivers to reinforce safety guidance.
The electric bass guitar played on the Specials' era-defining 1981 hit Ghost Town is being auctioned and is expected to sell for up to £20,000. The song was written by the Coventry-based band's founder, Jerry Dammers, about the recession at the time, police harassment and unemployment, and reached number one in the national charts. The 1971 blue Fender Precision guitar is being sold by the Specials bass player, Horace Panter. Mr. Panter paid £200 for the instrument in 1981. He said, "I'm not overly attached to the bass, and it would be nice if it went to someone who'll play it, rather than just shut it in a vault. It still plays really well." The guitar will be auctioned on the 10th of March. The song Ghost Town was credited with summing up the depressed mood of the country at the time, with riots in several British cities in 1981. Ghost Town spent 3 weeks at number one, 11 weeks in the top 40, and all three of the UK's major music magazines at the time named it as their single of the year. Luke Hobbs from Gardner Holgate Auctions said, "This is a bass guitar that's going to stir up quite a lot of interest among fans and collectors alike. Ghost Town is such an evocative track reflecting the social and political unrest of Britain at that time, and Horace Panter's bass is a big part of it." After the Specials broke up in 1981, Mr. Panter used the bass with new wave supergroup General Public, who had a US hit in 1984 with Tenderness. The band featured former members of The Beat, Dex's Midnight Runners, The Clash and The Specials. In 1988, Mr. Panter sold the bass, but he bought it back in 2010 to use when The Specials reunited.
A dinner lady estimated to have cooked and served 1 million meals during her career at a primary school in Coventry has retired after 39 years. Great-grandmother Sheila Rendell joined Good Shepherd Catholic Primary School in January 1987 and dedicated her life to the kitchen ever since. The lifelong Coventry resident was presented with flowers and a personalised rolling pin by pupils to say thank you on her last day on January the 30th. She said a lot has changed in the last 39 years, but it's always been a case of if the children are happy, then I'm happy. So I've always tried to make sure the food looks and tastes great. There have been so many highlights, but seeing the Christmas celebrations each year, cooking festive meals and hearing the children sing will stand out as my fondest memories. It's quite a magical place to be at that time of the year, and I will certainly miss it. I've felt at home ever since day one, and have always been supported by everyone around me over the years, which I'm incredibly grateful for. I've had a brilliant last few days, and I'm going to miss everyone, but I'm looking forward to retirement. Michael Kirby, principal at the school, said, Sheila has been a tremendous asset to Good Shepherd Catholic Primary School over the years, and we will be sorry to see her go. She will be missed by staff and pupils alike, and we wish her the very best for her retirement. Children at the school on Spring Road said their favourite meals prepared by her were roast dinners and macaroni and cheese, adding there was always special excitement for Chicken Burger Day. Sheila said she planned to spend her retirement travelling around the UK with her husband, as well as helping to raise her 5 grandchildren and 1 great-grandchild.
People in Warwickshire are being urged to prioritise their heart health by getting a free blood pressure test when they shop. Tesco has partnered with the British Heart Foundation to encourage residents to take a moment for their well-being this Heart Month by visiting a Tesco pharmacy for a quick blood pressure check. The latest campaign, which is launched during Heart Month, builds on the partnership between Tesco and the British Heart Foundation, encouraging the public to fit a blood pressure check into their everyday routine. Latest information from the Office for Health Improvement and Disparities estimates that 1 in 11 people in Warwickshire are living with undiagnosed high blood pressure. High blood pressure is one of the leading risk factors for heart attacks and strokes. However, because high blood pressure often has no signs or symptoms, the only way to know is to get tested. And when identified early, high blood pressure can be effectively managed, helping to protect long-term health. Tom Lye, Category Director for Health and Wellness at Tesco, said, "We want looking after your health to feel as simple as going into a supermarket to do a shop. Our pharmacy teams are here to offer a quick, friendly blood pressure check. No fuss, no appointment needed. A few minutes in store can help to give peace of mind or to get you support early if that's needed." Tesco pharmacy teams offer the free walk-in and pre-booked 10-minute blood pressure check carried out in private consultation rooms. They will explain the results clearly and, if a raised reading is detected, they will guide customers towards the appropriate next steps or support. All Tesco pharmacists and pharmacy staff undergo specialist Let's Talk training to help them speak to the public with sensitivity about the heart disease potential.
A 4-year-old girl is hoping her first ever haircut raises enough money to pay for wigs for children suffering with cancer. Heidi, who lives in Warwick, is due to have her first trim before she starts school in September, but is using the opportunity to help the Little Princess Trust by having her cut sponsored. So far, she has raised more than £1,400, enough to cover the cost of making 2 wigs, having them styled and donated to a child who had lost their hair through medical treatment or disease. Her mum, Lydia, a former hairdresser, said Heidi's hair would also go into making the wigs when she got it cut at the end of February. She said she wanted a haircut, and she wanted it short like mine. So I thought this would be a really good opportunity to donate the hair and raise a little bit of money. The Little Princess Trust, which is based in Hereford, was founded in 2005 by Wendy Tarpley Morris, following the death of her daughter Hannah, and marked its 20th anniversary last year. They make real hair wigs for children and young people up to the age of 24, who have lost their own hair through cancer or other diseases. They also fund research into childhood cancers. Lydia said her daughter was born with a full head of hair, and they had let it grow without cutting it ever since. It costs £700 to make and style a wig for an individual child, and that was our original fundraising target. And we were absolutely blown away that Heidi has raised double that in the day. She added she was hoping to get closer to £2,000 by the time the haircut happened. However, Lydia said her daughter did not fully appreciate what she was doing with her hair and the charity work. "I think she's just taking it in her stride," her mother said. "But what I'm going to do is print off all the comments, because she's had some lovely comments with the donations, so that when she's older, she can have a little read through them and understand exactly what she's done."
A local charity that gives free clothing to families and vulnerable people has said it faces closure unless it can bring in more money. Clothing Coventry has been operating since 2020, but a drop in donations and the cost of rent and overheads means it needs £50,000 a year to keep its doors open. Katie Wilson, who founded the clothing bank, said that unless the financial situation changed, they would have to close by the end of 2026. "We'd love for more people to come forward willing to donate £5 a month," she said. "We currently have 12 amazing people doing that, and I love each one of them, but it's not enough. Last year, our heater broke. We had to pay £6,000 for a new system because our volunteers can't work in the cold sorting the clothes. And these sorts of unexpected costs have really set the charity back." Clothing Coventry is based in two buildings owned by Coventry City Council, but Miss Wilson said that they paid full rent on the properties. "We don't get any reduction on rents. We have to pay full rent, and then you've got business rates, insurance, all those sorts of things," she said. Miss Wilson added, "It wasn't just those struggling with the cost of living who turned to them. In some cases, it was the authorities. The police arrived at our door one day saying they'd a young man in absolute desperate need. He was 16 years old and had no clothes at all." Similarly, Mohammed is one of those who turned to the charity for help after he arrived in the UK from West Africa. "I chose a coat, trousers, shirt and t-shirt for myself," he said. "I'm really happy for that, and I can recommend the charity to everyone who needs clothing. I really appreciate their services." Clothing Coventry's work is also appreciated by other charities around the city. Lisa College is a support worker at Her Safe Network, which supports victims of domestic abuse. "We had a client who was beaten so severely she was hospitalised. When she came to us, she had no clothing at all. We contacted Clothing Coventry and they helped straight away. The dignity they restored to someone at the very worst moment of their life is just irreplaceable."
Help for families with young children in Coventry has been boosted by a funding windfall. Coventry City Council has secured £6.1 million in government funding over the next 3 years to continue and expand its award-winning Family Hubs programme and its Start for Life Healthy Babies programme. The investment recognises Coventry's status as one of 13 national trailblazer sites for family support. The new funding follows Coventry's successful delivery of the previous Family Hub and Start for Life programme, which brought £6 million to the city between 2022 and 2026. Family Hubs provide free services for children, young people and families from pregnancy through to age 18, including parenting courses, infant feeding advice, perinatal mental health services, help with child development, access to computers and data, warm spaces, travel schemes, free clothing, energy and income advice, and free children's haircuts during the school holidays. Councillor Patricia Seaman, the Council's Cabinet Member for Children and Young People, said, "This significant investment is fantastic news for Coventry's families and shows the Government's confidence in our approach to supporting children and parents. Our family hubs have become vital community resources. We know that the early years are critical for children's development." Coventry North West MP Taiwo Awotamai said the funding was a boost for families across the city. She visited the Mosaic Family Hub and met with Michelle Wallace, the parenting lead in children's services, to see how the initiative supports families. Ms. Awotamai said, "This funding recognises how important family hubs are as a source of trusted support. As the mother of a young child, I understand the pressures that parents face and just how much this kind of support can mean to families. Over the next 3 years, the Council plans to expand the network of family hubs in partnership with health services, schools and community organisations, so that by 2028, the programme aims to help over 70% of Coventry children achieve a good level of development by the time they are 5, with a particular focus on reducing inequalities for disadvantaged children."
A nationally acclaimed artist will create her latest sculpture with help from students and staff at Coventry University. Charmaine Watkiss will work alongside students from the university's fine art course to bring the artwork to life before it takes pride of place in a solo exhibition entitled The Things We Hold Sacred, which will open in October. Charmaine, best known for her research-based drawing practice which focuses on plant knowledge passed through generations of Caribbean families, has worked in collections in iconic venues such as the British Museum in London. In Coventry, she will work as a resident artist at the university, where students will witness the development and production of the commission, which will help prepare them for life as an artist after graduating. Charmaine said, "I'm super excited and thankful to be offered this opportunity to create new, ambitious works that would not be otherwise possible. I'm really looking forward to experimenting with materials and benefiting from the university's expertise to realise my ideas for the work." Dr. Sam Vale, Curriculum Lead for Creative Practice at Coventry University, said, "This is an exceptional opportunity for our staff and students to collaborate with such an innovative and exciting artist as Charmaine. By being actively involved in the commissioning process, from early development through to production and exhibition, our students will gain invaluable insight into contemporary approaches to making work, helping to prepare them for future careers in the creative industries."
A former World War II blast-proof building and the 55 acres of woodland it sits on have been put on the market with a guide price of £2 million. Frogmore Woods, located in Fen End, Kenilworth, is described as a James Bond-style hideaway due to its secluded location and tough exterior. The building is a brick-built auxiliary power station and was constructed originally to power Royal Air Force Station RAF Honnelly during the war. Estate agent Ed Holt from Moveley said, "In 14 years of estate agency, this is one of the most unique opportunities I've had the privilege of selling. The property was originally formed as part of the wider RAF Honnelly complex, which operated as a fighter and training station during the war, with aircraft such as Spitfires, Hurricanes and later Mosquitoes flying from the base. In the listing, Moveley described the former powerhouse as having walls up to 13 inches thick, which whisper tales of wartime grit. The structure on site functioned as auxiliary infrastructure and was built to be blast resistant, which explains the unusually substantial brickwork," said the agent. "Planning permission has already been secured to turn the building into a 5-bedroom home." Mr. Holt said the James Bond-style hideaway offered complete seclusion, yet strong transport links nearby, and has a certain cinematic quality. It feels more like a hidden retreat than a conventional building plot, he said. The property is owned by a private local family who originally intended to develop it themselves, having secured planning and completed the necessary surveys. They later decided not to proceed, and the site is now on the open market, and viewings are strictly appointment only.
Nature-loving children at a Coventry primary school have been helping their feathered friends find a home. Pupils at Wobley Hall Primary School put their biodiversity knowledge to the test after participating in Eco Buddies, a programme run by house builder Orbit Homes. During the session, which aims to help pupils understand nature and promote biodiversity, pupils built and decorated their own bird boxes and learned about the important role that plants and animals play in keeping the planet healthy. Year 3 teacher Sally Mills said, "Our pupils are really curious about the environment, and we even have our own eco squad here. So this Eco Buddies experience was the perfect chance to help the children learn more about nature and biodiversity. The pupils absolutely loved the bird box activity because it gave them the opportunity to get hands-on with the idea of protecting the wildlife we have around us. We've all enjoyed learning about being as eco-friendly as possible, and we're very grateful to Orbit Homes for visiting us." Eco Buddies aims to support students and in understanding how all things in nature are connected. Brian Nearney, Chief Development Officer, said, "We were delighted to join pupils for an exciting Eco Buddies session. We heard how passionate the children were about the environment and felt this was a great opportunity for us to buddy up with them and help them learn more and how they can make their own positive impact both at home and at school."
Special patrols are being staged along roads in Warwickshire to try and save toads from being run over during the breeding season. The amphibians return to the same ponds they spawned in year after year, but many of these pools are now near highways that put their lives in danger. To help save them, members of the Warwickshire Amphibian and Reptile Team, known as WART, are installing toad ladders on curbsides so they do not get stuck in drains and gullies. Ben Wood from WART said, "We've not only got the cars flattening them on the roads, but they're also being trapped by this very efficient pitfall trapping system that we're setting up to catch rainwater. Unlike frogs, toads cannot jump or leap, which means even if they manage to cross a road, they may still be unable to climb the curb on the other side. They will follow along the curb until they get to somewhere they can climb out, or to a hole in the ground that's full of water. And a lot of our roads are full of gullies, and there's no way out for the poor amphibians." WART works with national charity Frog Life, which provides specially designed ladders that can be placed where toads are likely to cross a road, so that they can climb up safely. There are 7 registered crossings that toads are known to use, but Mr. Wood believes that there are likely to be more than WART is not aware of. "Our volunteers go out at night this time of year with torches and high-vis jackets, and they will pick up toads they see on the roads and carry them to the other side. They'll also be checking down those gullies and rescuing any amphibians they find trapped at the bottom."
Outlook News.
And thanks there to Elaine and Peter for the local news roundup. I've only got one announcement, and it's the usual one, of course, about the sun. Sunrise at the moment is 7:02 in the morning, and sunset at 5:37.
Isn't it nice to have longer days?
It is, very yes. much.
So now we move on to what's happening at the hub here, and here's Hugh.
Thank you very much. We were just having a chat outside, actually, about the lighting up and lighting down times.
Yeah.
And you're wondering, sort sort of the utility, but apparently lots of people use them for closing their curtains and doing things like
absolutely,
that.
Absolutely, yes. Which is important, actually.
Didn't realise quite about that, so there we are.
I always thought it was just superfluous, but the people say, we want it, please. Yes,
that's good. That's fine. It's a bit like the racing tips on Radio 4, as used to be. Mind you, they stopped doing those, didn't they? Anyway.
You never win.
No, because I never bet.
Ah, that's a good reason.
Right, hello everybody, back from my week off, in which I did absolutely sweet nothing. So that was very nice indeed, apart from my husband retired, so we had a bit of a party about that, but that was fine. Now, theatre trip. Now, a lot of people signed up for a theatre trip without knowing when it was or what it was. They just said, oh, I want to go on the next theatre trip. So the list is now open and I'm ready to reveal the day that we will be going and what you'll be going to see. So the next theatre trip will be on the 25th of March, which is a Wednesday, and they'll be down to the Criterion as usual to see The Unfriend, which is a play by Stephen Moffat, starring in very small part me. So I've got a role in there. Don't come on till the second half of the second act. Got lots of laughs. It's good. It's a comedy. There is a
farce. More sounds like more like a farce than
yes,
a comedy.
Yes, quite farcical. So yes. The premise is that there's a middle-class British couple who are on a cruise, and they meet a loud, brash American woman who they befriend for the cruise. They're cruise chums. At the end, they say, "Oh yes, let's meet up afterwards." Never thinking, of course, that it will happen. Anyway, she invites herself to come and stay with them in their at their home in England, where there are the two teenage children as well. What they discover, and I'm not giving anything away about this, what they discover just before she arrives is that she is suspected of a number of murders. So. And thereafter, hilarity ensues. It's a lot of fun. Yeah. We're having an awful lot of fun rehearsing this. So very light-hearted. I'm hoping that lots of people will come to that. We'll do the same thing as we normally do. So we'll have our fish and chips here first, probably about sort of 5-ish, 5:15. We'll then go down to the theatre for 6:15-ish for a touch tour, and then we will be staying on to watch the show. Well, you will be, I'll be in it, but not until the very end, but that's fine. I can join you for that first bit. Tickets as ever are £15. Be very pleased if, you know, when you book, you pay
plus fish and chips, of course.
Yes, and then there's fish and chips as well, which you pay for on the day. If you need the bus, either both ways to come in and go home again, it's £7, or if you just want the bus home, and some people do because it's fairly late at night, then it's an extra £4 for the bus. So just call us on 024 7671 7522 and get through to reception, and they will put your name down on the list, and then next time in you can pay for your ticket. We are asking for people to pay up front for their tickets, because there have been a few occasions in the past where people said, oh yes, I'm coming, and I've booked tickets, and then they didn't come. So and we've been left a bit out of pocket on there. So if you'd like to come, book and pay for your ticket. We've got a been visited a couple of weeks ago by a lady called Mel from a company, and it is a company called Declutter Bugs. And what she does is basically she helps you declutter. It's not quite the full Marie Kondo you may have heard of her as, like, organising your space, though I'm sure she could. But you know, if your life is a bit cluttered, if your house is a bit cluttered, and a lot of people, you know, because of visual impairment, will struggle to keep a tidy house or a well-ordered house, and that can be a real advantage if you know where things are and reliably. To be able to lay your hands on them if you can't see very well, then she's got very, very good reviews, and you know, she's reasonably reasonably priced and very flexible in terms of what she will offer. So if you are interested in having this service, and I know a couple of people here have used her and have liked her a lot, then you can, yeah, £35 an hour. That's what she is. And it's a minimum 2 hours. So there we are, £70 for your first thing. But she's very flexible. She'll work around you to fit you. So it does cost a bit of money, but she's very well reviewed and very well regarded. So if you're interested in that, that's fine. Now, I've mentioned this organisation before as well. It's called Visiting Angels. Again, they're a company. They sort of somewhere between care and just helping out, really. I mean, they do full care packages and everything, but they also have an hourly rate where if you just want somebody to help you go and do a bit of shopping, come out with you to do a bit of shopping or to do some other stuff out of the house or whatever, and I know a lot of people have used their service and their people are great, then Visiting Angels, you know, we've had nothing but good words said about them, I have to say. Again, you know, it's a charged for service, but you know, if you need like a couple of hours a week, just to go out and do some stuff, and you need somebody to help you, then they are very well placed and have lots of nice people. I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, but we were approached by a lady called Devi Sahota, who runs mindfulness classes, and I think that's something that would go really, really well here. So if we get enough interest, I would like to start off a group for mindfulness. So it's a class who she says it's ideal for anyone who wants to age well, seeks calm and balance, values gentle self-care, and enjoys a supportive community. It's non-threatening, non-religious, unbiased, suitable for all abilities, and no equipment needed, and there's no physical exercise involved. And you just come as you are into a welcoming space, which will be here. You wear comfortable clothes and cozy socks, because you have to take your shoes off. So make sure they're clean socks as well. Yes. You can relax, restore, and reconnect with yourself. So it's a bit, you know, it's a bit sort of a gentle.
They sort of talk to you, or do they encourage intercommunication between people?
Yes, yeah, there is. So there's the, I mean, there's a meditative element. There is, and there's, you know, talk about certain things as well. So it's, I think, you know, I think
good.
It would be a, I think it would be a really nice thing. We've had requests for meditation classes, whatever, in the past, and every time we've run a meditation group, we've had quite a lot of interest. So this would be an ongoing thing, and we'd charge it probably at our usual rates. Might be in the yoga category, depends, because we'd have to pay for the tutor. But anyway, we'll talk about that. But what we really want are expressions of interest. So give us a call, leave your name and with reception, and they will have a list there for people who are interested in the mindfulness course, and the sooner we can get that going, the happier I will be. And I think that is it for this week.
Thank you very much, Hugh. See you next week. You had a good week off, though.
Yes, very
I'm
very
surprised
nice.
You're allowed to get away with doing nothing.
I know, it's lovely. I basically sat in my kitchen reading and then, you know, baking the odd loaf of bread when the spirit moved me. So good. There we are.
Excellent. Well, back to the grindstone now.
Back to the grindstone now.
See you next week. And now it's time for Sarah to tell you about the last week's sporting highlights.
Well, hello there, folks. It's Sarah with sport. Lovely, lovely listeners. I haven't forgotten. Can I first apologise for any rogue bangs you may hear? For the third week, next door have still got the builders in. Though I know our lovely technical producer will do her very best to take them out. So I'm going to start, as usual, with local football. Well, before I talk about the match, midweek it was great news for Coventry City when three of our players opted to renew their contracts. Liam Kitchen, Jay De Silva and most amazingly, Milan van Avac. I mean, Milan, we know we've had several well over multi-million pound offers from European clubs for him, and that throw-in that he's got is so devastating. Anyway, enough of that. I'd better talk about the match now, hadn't I, folks? Well, on Saturday we headed apparently 26 miles to play our neighbours West Bromwich Albion, the Baggies. At that point, we were first in the division by one tentative point. West Brom were actually quite well down, but we won't talk about that. Now, West Brom began, as usual, like bats out of hell, but nil desperandum, because within 16 minutes, a lovely pass by Jack Redoni met the feet of Ephraim Mason-Clark, who kicked it goalwards. It was deflected back by the goalkeeper, who then seemed to make a real mess up of it, I think, and Ephraim simply kicked the return from the goalie over the goalie's head and scored. Coventry 1, West Brom 0. And then it got even better a bit later, because Jack Redoni scored what ITV called an outstanding goal. This was in about the 30th minute. He seemed to simply get the ball about halfway up the field and mostly make a solo break. So we went in at half time 2-0 up. At that point, cue quite a lot of the West Brom supporters to vacate. The fire alarm must have been going again, lol. Now that is how it actually ended. 2-0. Now, because this was a lunchtime kickoff, this left us top of the league by 4 points. But what would happen with the 3 o'clock kickoffs? Well, actually, they all went our way, because Middlesbrough could only draw, so they gained 1 point. And all of the others, including Millwall and Ipswich, much vaunted, were both all lost. In fact, City were the only team in the top six to win. So this leads City 3 points ahead at the top of the league. But most importantly, 9 points ahead of third placed Millwall. Now, the reason I highlight that is position one and two get automatic promotion, whereas 3 to 6 have to go through the playoffs, and we really don't want the disappointment of Sunderland or the heartbreak of Luton when we lost at Wembley, do we, folks? Well, it would be better than finishing and getting relegated, but that we ain't going there. Seriously, we ain't going there. Now, we have a midweek match, but that will have happened by the time you're listening to this. That is away to Sheffield United, you know, where our much-loved Gus Hamer plays. Come on, Gus, do us a favour. But next Saturday, 3 p.m. kickoff at the Coventry Building Society Arena, we welcome back Mark Robbins with his team, Stoke City. But I'm afraid elsewhere, with our leading lower league, non-league clubs, it wasn't such a good day. Indeed, in Tier 6, Stratford lost 2-0 away to Chester, which really cements their position at the bottom of their league. And Stratford lost by a similar score to Harbury United. Oh, well. But back to good news. Coventry Rugby Club were playing Hartbury College. Well, it's called a college, but it ain't really. It's more like a feeder school for Gloucester in the Premiership, but they ran out thumping victors at 31 points to 19, not only picking up the points for a win, but also the bonus point for scoring 4 tries. Now, one thing nationally I just want to pick on before I talk about the Winter Olympics is the T20 World Cup cricket, because despite England's somewhat, well, very ropey start, they made it into the final 8, the quarterfinals. And in their first match, the quarterfinal, they defeated Sri Lanka. England scored 146 runs, but pegged Sri Lanka back to under 100. So they now go to play the might of Pakistan. But again, that will have happened by the time that you're listening to this tape. But we can live in hope. Well, I realise I've had a brain blip here. So desperate was I to bring you the news about the cricket that I forgot to update you on the Six Nations games. So I'm back to rugby now. These all happened over the weekend. Well, it was a bad day for England, despite playing at Twickenham, or the Alliance Stadium, as I believe it is now called. We were thrashed by Ireland, who inflicted their heaviest defeat away on us that they have ever done in this tournament. It was also a bad day for Wales, who again, despite playing in the Millennium Stadium in Cardiff and looking so much as if they were about to get their first victory for quite a few games in this tournament, succumbed to a late defeat by Scotland. And as could be pretty much predicted, Ireland beat Italy. And so now on to the Winter Olympics. Well, after the gold rush I told you about last week, normality for the British team returned. In particular, poor old Kirsty Muir picked up her second 4th place, whilst our women curlers, who were the current Olympic champions, crashed out and didn't make it through to the semis. The men only just squeaked through, thanks mostly to results elsewhere. But then, to give them their due, they beat Switzerland in the semi-finals, meaning they went to play on with a gold medal match. Well, I'm sure you'll have heard it on the news. I'm afraid in the final, they lost to Canada. But let's put it another way. They still won the silver medal, although to see the heartbreak etched on their faces at the end, you wouldn't think so. And just to say one thing about that match, over 6 million people watched it on television, which apparently was more than what ITV put out, Britain's Got Talent. I make no further comment. So what happened on the final day? Well, it was the, now what's this called? Get this right, Sarah. Freestyle skiing half pipe. It's basically where the skiers go up and down in literally a bowl shaped like half a pipe. And every turn they do back somersaults, twists, you name it. That's already happened on snowboards, but this time it was on skis. And first of all, I need to say this had been postponed from Friday due to high wind. Then it was postponed from Saturday due to too heavy snow. So it actually took place at 9:30 in the morning on Sunday. I feel so sorry for those women preparing themselves twice before and even then on the final day not knowing if it would go ahead. Anyway, it did go ahead, and I'm delighted to say that Britain's Zoe Atkins took bronze medal, and she was so chuffed. Also, she's almost a local lass. I say local because she was born in the States, but her dad's from Solihull. So what about the closing ceremony? Well, I have to say I was quite excited about this after the spectacular opening ceremony. But I'm afraid, now this is Sarah Lewis's interpretation, there was a lot of music, a lot of dancing, a lot of flag waving, but I wouldn't give much for anything else. There weren't even that many athletes there because the ceremony was held in Verona, which is nearly 100 miles from Milan, the main Olympic village, and even further from Cortina. So a lot of them, obviously after a week of travel, had just chosen to stay and celebrate back where they were staying. Anyway, I'm pleased to say that our flag was carried in by Matt Weston and Charlotte Banks. Matt, of course, winning the two gold medals in the skeleton tea tray, and Charlotte winning a gold in the mixed snowboard cross. Now, just so you know that you haven't got that far to look forward to a return of action on ice, it's the Winter Paralympics beginning early March. I believe it's the 6th. But then, if you've had your appetite whetted by seeing all this sport on telly, I'm afraid you've got to wait until February 2030 for the next Winter Games. But at least they're in France, so they're pretty easy to watch. They're going to be based around the Alps, although the opening ceremony, I understand, will be in Lyon. And finally, one of the athletes in the Winter Olympics suffers from vertigo. And his event, well, he only went and won the high mountain ski jump. I leave no remark on that, but well done. You conquered your fears. But I'm going to stick to both my feet on the floor, hopefully with no tumbles, so that I will be pleased to speak to you all lovely, lovely, wonderful listeners next week. Bye.
Thanks, Sarah. And now, of course, following sport, as usual, it's Dave with your postbag.
This is Postbag. Join in the discussion.
Hello and welcome to your postbag. I hope you're well. We begin by welcoming back Jag Singh, who's the landlord. He lets you know there's some furniture for sale.
Hi everybody, this is Jag Singh. Hope you're all keeping well. Just a quick message on this group. Just to let anybody know, I've got a property in Cowden where my tenant, she's moving back to Lithuania. I provided her with some of the furniture, but she can't take her furniture with her. So she's asked me to dispose of it pretty much minimal money, really. So if anybody is looking for anything to do with your home, there's double beds, wardrobes, sofas, exercise bike, fridge, washing machine, microwave, lots of pots and pans, all in reasonable condition. I have said to her I will try and get her some money for it, so if anybody is interested and doesn't mind paying a reasonably cheap fee, please contact me on 07792 581465. I'd rather these go to a nice, good home, which I know all our lovely listeners are really nice people. Unfortunately, I won't be able to deliver as I don't drive. But if anybody's interested in anything, please give me a call. The property will be available to be rented out, so if anybody's looking for a house in Cowden, I know this is a bit of shameless self-promoting, but you never know who's listening and how we can help each other. That being aside, I hope everybody's having a nice start to the new year, and I look forward to contributing many, many more things to Postbag in 2026. Take care, everybody.
Thank you, Jag. Jag's phone number, once again, is 07792 581 465. Any transaction is purely between you and Jag and does not involve Coventry Talking Newspaper, and you have to provide transport. Elizabeth talks about a back-to-school bangers evening at Allsley Church Hall, which involved sing-along primary school assembly songs. This was started by a primary school teacher doing Zoom music lessons during lockdown, which led him leading an enthusiastic crowd singing along at Glastonbury. Here's Liz.
Today I join the parishioners of All Saints Church, Allsley, for their version of Primary School Bangers. This was a fantastic evening of uplifting hymns which celebrate the joy of accepting God in your life and giving thanks. This was performed at Glastonbury in 2025 by James Partridge, who had the revellers there enraptured.
Thank you, Elizabeth. What memories do you have of school assemblies or school itself, good or bad? Now, Robert Franklin phones me up from time to time on my mobile phone on 077 318 57673, telling me about the latest exciting news in his life. And just recently, after being interviewed on R&IB Connect Radio, which is on Freeview on the TV, he has been on Rugby Talking Newspaper. He will be interviewed on two talking newspapers in Tynmouth and Dawlish, including Here and Now, talking about things like going on holiday on his own with the help of journey care at railway stations, etc. Well, thank you, Robert. It's great to hear what you've been doing, and tell us what you've done in life or been doing in life, and maybe what you will still do in the future. Another piece of information from Robert is if you are of working age and looking for employment, the National Career Service will help you write your CV. Robert has discovered that if you are involved in volunteering, if you let the National Career Service know, they will add it onto your CV. And finally, as Sarah says at the end of sport, have you ever been in hospital and the nurse has left you, say, a cup of tea on the table and it's gone cold because you haven't been able to see it? Well, here's Sarah with a recent experience of being in hospital as a visually impaired person and her advice to you on who to call for help.
Hello, listeners. It's Sarah here, but I'm not here to talk about sport. I'm actually here to talk about something far more important. Recently, as some of you will know, I had the misfortune to spend 3.5 weeks in hospital. In this case, it was the George Eliot, but I think what I'm going to say applies to most hospitals. Now, while it was very frustrating and painful, in fact, I had to lie on my back for a week, which was, well, yes, boring. What really annoyed me and upset me was the staff ignorance about sight loss and its effects on an individual and what they needed. For example, on one occasion, well, they were for always putting down plates of food without telling me. On one occasion, I found out that I'd been given a bowl of macaroni cheese when I put my elbow in it. I was told off several times for not taking my tablets, which had been put down in a pot on my cupboard. A, I couldn't reach it, and B, I didn't know it was there. Staff would appear and disappear, not introduce themselves, and halfway through a conversation they would just walk off. And it was only when other patients were telling me that the staff member had gone that I would stop talking to this void. So on the first occasion this happened, when I was on my ward one, as I will refer to it, I contacted Hugh. And I don't know who Hugh contacted, but it worked. Things rapidly improved. One or two staff members still didn't really get it, but they reluctantly did what they'd been advised. Then, unfortunately, after 36 hours of this new system, I was transferred to what I shall refer to as Ward 2. Hoping that some of the messages would have gone with me, I tried it out. Nothing had been transferred, and I really was back to square one with visual impairment awareness. This time I contacted PALS, the Patient Advice and Liaison Service. The one at the George Elliot can be reached from the switchboard direct. I believe at Walsgrave, when you ring switchboard, they will give you another number to phone, specifically for PALS. But PALS were excellent. I left the message on a Sunday evening. First thing Monday morning, they were up talking to me, asking me what I needed, asking me what was going wrong. They noted it all down and produced a laminated A4 sheet. Well, they produced two actually, one for my locker and one for my table, with all the requirements that I had, like being spoken to, staff member introducing themselves, being told where food was, also a bit about the clock directions on food, because to make it worse, the ward I was on by then had no natural light and my overhead light didn't work. Now, the system wasn't perfect, but it made life a heck of a lot better. They'd also got whoever had access to it to send a message round on the internal staff chat group telling everybody about me, my requirements, what I could see, what I couldn't see. And most people got it. Most people, I say, the ones that seemed to not engage were the consultants, but that's another thing. So if you have the misfortune to find yourself in hospital, your pal is PALS. Hope this has been helpful, listeners. Bye.
Thank you, Sarah. That's a great example of why you must keep Postbag going and not let things like apathy end its future. It's too important. Every little message, whatever it's about, is important. So keep them coming in. I did like the item about the famous people reaching milestones birthdays this year. Well, Sir David Attenborough is 100 in May. Are you a fan like me and my lovely late wife Sheila? I will be 80 on May the 14th. My eldest son is organising a party on Thursday the 14th of May at 7:30 p.m. at the Tump Folk Club at the Humber, Humber Road, Coventry, and there'll be sing-arounds, including a spot for me and Graham singing. Maybe Paul too. Okay, so let me know if you're really interested in coming. And it's Outlook's 50th birthday on the 16th of September. Any suggestions on how to celebrate it and also memories of Outlook past? Have you been listening to Outlook from the start? We'd really like to know about that. So thank you for your messages this week. please let's hear from you next time, and bye for now.
This is Outlook. You can contact Postbag.
Our website is www.talkingnewspaper.org.uk. Our email address is postbag@talkingnewspaper.org.uk. Join in the discussion on Postbag.
And that's Postbag until next week. Now, this week, Elaine visits Radford Semmeley, which now, of course, is virtually an extension of Levington Spa.
Radford Semmeley. The name is thought to originate from the Red Ford, or the Reeded Ford, possibly over the River Leam, and the name of the Norman landowner in the reign of Henry I, who was Henry de Semmeley. Hence the Red Reeded Fort on the land of Semmeley. But there is evidence of life in the village long before the reign of Henry I. A flint hand axe and two other flints were found in 1968, and they would have belonged to ancient Britons over 30,000 years ago. Radford Semmeley Parish lies between Leamington Spa to the west, Off Church to the north, and the Roman Foss Way to the east. Coins dating back to the Roman period have been found in gardens in the village, so presumably there was habitation here around AD 300. The site of a Roman villa on Ponce Hill Farm, about half a mile west of the Fossway, was brought to light in the 1920s. The oldest building in the village is the church. It is probable that in medieval times the village centred around the church, but sometime later, by 1600, the whole village had moved half a mile away. The reason for this is not known, but the church remains isolated from the village, or maybe just a short walk. There may have been a church here before the Norman conquest, but monks from the Kenilworth Priory built or rebuilt it in the early 12th century. The only Norman part remaining is the south wall, where the typical rubble masonry and a small window can be seen. The tower, which is possibly on older foundations, is thought to be a 15th century construction. Over the centuries, the church has undergone alterations and rebuilding. The church interior, as it is seen today, is largely a result of the extensive rebuilding in 1889. In 1998, two new bells were added to make the tower a ring of six, and a new steel frame fitted to take the six bells, which was partly funded by the Millennium Commission. Radford Hall was probably built between 1600 and 1620, and contains some fine wood carving dated 1622, which is believed to have been done by a travelling band of Huguenots. There remains part of an ancient wall which may have enriched the grounds and may be older than the hall itself. A fine postern gate in this wall is visible from the road. In the early 19th century, the building was rebuilt with brick covering the original stone. The hall has recently been converted into several dwellings. Radford was famous in the area for its ale. This was originally home-brewed at Radford Hall, but proved so popular that the Thornley family built a brewery on the land opposite the hall. This flourished from 1900 until takeover and closure in 1969. The site is now occupied by a design company. There are two thatched houses on the main road through the village, near the turn to Off Church. One of these has an unusual chimney, which divides and then rejoins, with a window in the middle. Very strange. This is clearly seen on the east end of the house. The manor house opposite the thatched houses was built around 1800 and has a round tower similar to the one on Edge Hill. Considerable additions were made in the late 19th century, and that has been divided into four dwellings. The White Lion, with its thatched roof, is the only pub in the village and dates back to the 17th century. A number of clay pipes have been found on the land to the south of the inn. These pipes date from 1640 to 1710,
and were probably thrown on the rubbish tip from the White Lion. The old village of Radford Semele was situated along the main turnpike road and what is now called Lewis Road. There was considerable expansion in the village after 1956. Prior to this, the population had been between 500 and 600 for over 100 years, and the population grew to over 2,500. The canal which passes through the parish was begun in 1795. And opened in 1800 as the Warwick and Napton Canal. It later became part of the Grand Union Canal. The original narrow locks were widened during the modernisation programme of 1925. The railway linking Leamington with Rugby was built in 1851 and included a fine skew-arched bridge over the canal near its boundary with Offchurch. The railway track was lifted in 1967, and this part of the railway and the canal towpath are popular walks for villagers.
And next week is a visit to Radway, right on the edge of Edge Hill. And in the following article, written by Ray Bradshaw, he asks, "How do I stop my dad using his chainsaw at 6 a.m? And it's read by Sue.
1 in 6 people in the UK adult population is deaf or affected by loss of hearing in their lifetime. 2 of those people are my parents. My dad, David, was born deaf and is a sign language user. My mum, Jill, lost her hearing when she was 14 months old through measles, so her main method of communication is lip reading and speaking. People are always fascinated when I tell them my mum and dad are deaf and just want to ask what it's like. The truth is, it's fine, until you're on the loo and run out of toilet roll. I've lost count of the number of times I've been asked what the best thing is about having deaf parents. People always presume it's sneaking out of the house or making lots of noise. The answer is not even close to that. The best thing about having deaf parents was when I was a kid and watching TV. If Mum and Dad started vacuuming and it was too loud to hear the telly, I could just pull their plug out and they would carry on. We did have to buy 3 vacuums in 2 years because they kept on thinking they were broken. But on the bright side, we did get a lot of Argos points. I'm hugely proud of my upbringing as a coder, child of deaf adults, and it's a big part of my identity. I've been doing stand-up shows for nearly a decade now, where either I sign the show myself or have a sign language interpreter on stage with me. The first tour I did in 2017-2018 was amazing. We had more than 800 deaf people come to their first comedy show. I was really proud, till I found out that deaf people pay concession prices, and I was $3,000 down. I love doing the sign language shows, but stand-up doesn't let you have an ego. The day after I got a great review, there was a hearing dog for the deaf in the front row, and it looked a bit squashed. So I signed to the deaf person that the dog should come on stage and just stretch out. She agreed and the dog came on stage next to me. About a minute later, I did a set-up for a joke, and as I was about to hit the punchline, the dog did the biggest yawn I've ever heard. A properly brutal heckle. I'm back on tour from the end of February with my new show, Coda, and I mainly just chat about my mum and dad and how the upbringing I had has shaped my life. My dad is one of the biggest characters you will ever meet. He once turned up outside my house at 6:30 a.m. with a chainsaw to cut my garden hedge. We hadn't discussed it or anything. He just turned up with a chainsaw blaring that was so loud it woke up all my neighbours. I remember signing to him saying, "You can't do that. It's so loud. You've woken up all my neighbours." He gave a typically deaf dad response and signed back to me, "I'm deaf, I can't hear. Sounds like your problem," and just went back to cutting the hedge with the chainsaw blaring. I think I gained a good sense of humour and mischievousness from both my parents, as they're constantly up to something. One of my dad's favourite things to do is when he's arguing with my mum in sign language, he just starts to look away from her and then shuts his eyes. If you can't see the signing, you can't lose. It's genius. I tried to take on that level of pettiness when I was asked to interpret my own parents' evening. After a whole evening of me making stuff up and alluding to me being better than I am, my dad turned round and signed to me, "You do know I can lip read too." Not the ending I was hoping for. I'm excited to go back on tour because one of my favourite things to see in the audience is families that resemble mine who are off to a theatre for the first time because it's an accessible show for them. I always let the audience ask questions about growing up with deaf parents or sign language because I think a big problem with disability is people want to ask questions but don't for fear of offending. But no audience question will ever be as bad as the time I was on live TV and was asked by a journalist, "So, if your mum and dad are deaf, does that mean you can read Braille?" And I responded very quickly, "No, because they can see." I genuinely don't think I would be doing stand-up if I hadn't had my upbringing. Because when you grow up in the circumstances I did, you become very confident very quickly. Whether it's phoning the bank at the age of 8 on your parents' behalf, or becoming a de facto interpreter in so many situations, that speaking in front of people doesn't faze you because you've been doing it all your life. I love it and wouldn't change it for the world. It's a huge part of my identity, and I would love more people to learn sign language. It's a brilliant language that you could learn locally at classes, so look into it, so that in future you too can help me tell my dad to stop using his chainsaw at 6 a.m.
I'm sure many of you are familiar and may follow Antiques Roadshow, presented by Fiona Bruce on BBC One on Sunday evening, and the medal expert Mark Smith. Mark has always had a fascination for his dad's wartime experiences, which takes centre stage in his new book. This is taken from an article in the Radio Times and is read by Margaret.
This is not a book about medals. The author Mark Smith has examined and valued various items of militaria on Antiques Roadshow since 2014 and is colloquially known as the Medal Man. He has a one-man theatre show called For Valour, The Story of the Victoria Cross, and is an avid numismatist with an ambition to collect 1,500 medals. I have over 800, but I'm 62, and if it's going to take me another 30 years, that's going to be a bit of an uphill struggle. Other than the 6 occasions a year when members of the public tell him I wouldn't dream of selling the medals on television, he works 2 days a week as a medal dealer in London. But as I said, this isn't about medals. Medals definitely feature in Medal Man, how could they not? But it's the subtitle of this quasi-memoir that really gives the game away, Dad, Me and the Second World War. The book is a love letter to his father, Les Smith, a wireless operator air gunner with the RAF, who flew in a PBY Catalina flying boat during the war. The medals are a means to tell the story of a man considered by his son to be his best friend and who, even after a successful post-war career as a university lecturer and author, would still every day for the rest of his life revisit one brief traumatic moment from the 1,000-plus hours he flew during the conflict. It took place on the 26th of April 1945. Smith was part of a covert mission to drop propaganda leaflets on Japanese-held locations in northern Sumatra. He had just swapped places inside the aircraft with his best friend, 22-year-old Harry Shirt, who then leaned out of the blister, a bubble-shaped window for gunners, to make the drop. The Japanese opened fire with heavy machine guns and light anti-aircraft guns, records the logbook. It was 22:17 local time when all hell broke loose aboard J-240. Shirt was hit by a heavy caliber bullet and died as Smith kneeled over him and held his hand. I returned to Radio Watch, trying hard to convince myself I'd just witnessed Harry dropping off to sleep, he wrote. Dad was a great storyteller, says Smith now. His stories of aeroplanes were fascinating, where the guns were, how the ammunition was stacked, that sort of thing. But it was Harry he talked about every day, even when I saw him 2 days before he passed away in July 2024. I asked him, from the moment the Japanese opened fire to the time when they finished, how long did it last? And he said, 9 seconds. All the time I'd thought he was talking about his friend, but he wasn't, was he? He was reliving those 9 seconds, thinking he could have done something to help Harry. My father was clearly suffering from the effects of trauma. Fans of Antiques Roadshow will remember the emotional coda to the Harry Shirt story a couple of years ago. A pair of flying boots that was bought at a military affair turned out to have belonged to the pilot on that fateful mission, Flight Lieutenant John Ashford, and a letter from Shirt's mother was found inside. And this is the essence of what the book is really about. Medals and other military artifacts are tangible reminders of bravery and sacrifice and can be bought and sold, collected and displayed, stored away or traded. But the stories behind them are the truly valuable commodity. When my dad looked at his medals in a box, he saw Harry. Someone else will see his boat being blown up, explained Smith. An ex-soldier's wife might think, George is not the same person who went to war. I wonder what he went through. But he doesn't talk about it, and so she sees the man she lost and the medals go to the back of the sock drawer. When the couple die, the children clear the house and find the medals, but they don't mean anything because there's no connection without a story, so they put them in the loft. Years later, the grandchildren do a project about World War II, and suddenly great-granddad is a hero. Did you know he was in a Lancaster? I wonder where his medals are. Occasionally they turn up an Antiques Roadshow, where an attentive and empathetic Mark Smith will endeavour to coax out whatever details family history has to offer, and then gently correct, fill in gaps and provide content. Don't forget, we only film 5 out of the 300-odd that I see in a day, he smiles, and I've honestly only ever come across one group of medals that I valued on the show that were then sold. They went for £100,000. People bring medals to reunite them with the reason they were awarded, or because they are proud of their relative and want people to hear his or her story. You will find the medals of Sergeant Les Smith, service number 1389595, on the cover of his son's book, Medal Man, Dad, Me and the Second World War, by Mark Smith.
If you watch Antiques Roadshow, of course, you'll know Mark's extraordinary knowledge of medals. Going back further to early television, it was John Logie Baird, who was a pioneering inventor, who gave a demonstration of his television just 100 years ago. This is from the Comedy Telegraph, written by Marion McCullen and read by Elaine.
Without him, what would we all be doing for hours every evening? Instead of doing something more interesting, we are a world addicted to television. And the man we have to thank for that, or not, is John Logie Baird. But it was hardly a smooth start for the inventor. In fact, his season could have been cancelled very early on, when he gave himself a 1,000-volt electric shock while conducting one of his experiments. Left nursing a burnt hand, he was sent packing from his premises above a florist's shop in Hastings, and moved to London to continue his work. This wasn't his only early failure. the Scottish electrical engineer and television pioneer, grew up with a love of invention, and he installed electric lighting at his parents' home when he was still a teenager. But ideas for a rustless glass razor that had a tendency to shatter and an air-soled pneumatic shoe that burst both failed to take off, as did his attempts to make diamonds under intense heat from graphite and a homemade hemorrhoid cream. There was also the noctovisor, a machine for seeing through fog. However, when he was 32, Baird started work on creating a working television system and was driven to succeed, but on a budget. He did not have a lot of money, so he used bike and car parts, darning needles, and even an old tea chest at one point. The inventor wrote in 1924, "Funds were going down. The situation was becoming desperate. But 100 years ago, on January the 26th, he gave the first demonstration of his television system at his laboratory at Firth Street in London to around 40 members of the Royal Institution and a reporter from the Times newspaper. He was 38 when he set up the Baird Television Company the following year, and his mechanically scanned system was adopted by the BBC in 1929. He provided an improved system 5 years later and also helped to pioneer colour TV, which later would form the basis of the technique used by NASA to bring live colour TV pictures back from the moon. A policeman's helmet and a bunch of red roses were among the first items shown in the colour transmission in 1928, and 10 years later, future Crossroads star Noel Gordon became the first woman to be seen on colour TV sets when she took part in Baird's 1938 colour transmission. The son of a clergyman, Baird was born in Helensburgh and studied at Glasgow University. He served as a superintendent engineer of the Clyde Valley Electric Power Company during the First World War and began working on his television invention when he retired from the company due to ill health. He struggled in the beginning to prove his abilities to sceptical and discerning peers, many of whom believed it was impossible to transmit a living image. He managed to relay a static image in 1924, and the following year transmitted the first television picture of the head of a ventriloquist dummy nicknamed Stooky Bill. Baird later said, "The image of the dummy's head formed itself on the screen with what appeared to me almost unbelievable clarity. I had got it." He then asked office worker William Tainton to repeat the experiment, and the 20-year-old became the first human face to ever appear on screen. A large spinning disc was at the heart of Baird's system. The disc was invented by Paul Nipco in 1883 and featured a spiral of holes which allowed light to pass into a photocell. Baird designed bigger and bigger discs with larger and larger lenses, culminating in a disc more than 8 feet in diameter with an 8-inch lens. Running at full speed, 750 revs per minute, it was lethal. The heavy lenses flew off and burst into shards of glass when they hit walls, and the now unbalanced disc would leap around the laboratory before destroying itself. Baird was undeterred and continued his experiments, which saw him give a demonstration of crude static images on a small screen at Selfridge's department store in 1925. The pioneer continued to develop his ideas for television all his life. He succeeded in transmitting live TV pictures from London to New York, demonstrated 3D and infrared images, and developed phonovision to record TV onto discs. He also patented the telechrome, a new type of cathode ray screen for receiving colour pictures. Baird died from a stroke at the age of 57 in 1946 and was still coming up with new innovations until the end. 2 years before his death, he devised a standard of HD TV of comparable picture quality to some modern HD TV sets. The Royal Mint brought out a 50p coin in 2021 to celebrate the inventor of the first working television. Claire McLaren, a director of commemorative coins at the Royal Mint, described Baird as a true British icon and a pioneer of one of the greatest scientific discoveries of the 20th century. English Heritage blue plaques also celebrate his work at Firth Street in Soho and his home at Crescent Wood Road in London.
What enormous advances television has made in the last 100 years. Staying with television, though, many of you will be fans of Strictly Come Dancing. Everyone thinks it's joyful and sparkly, but Gurka Marquez, one of the professional dancers, says it's hard work and talks about his Strictly future and why he won't be moving back to Spain. Read by Margaret.
This is the real me, Gurka Marquez says, as he pulls off his navy beanie to reveal a mop of unruly hair. He laughs, then puts the beanie back on. People think of me all groomed with slick hair and tight trousers, but it is actually the opposite. The Bilbao-born dancer, who has been a pro and fan favourite on Strictly Come Dancing for the past decade, is speaking to me over Zoom from his kitchen table in Manchester. If you ever wondered what life looks like in the aftermath of the Strictly frenzy, Marquez's account of the weekend just gone paints a compelling picture. 48 hours spent largely on the sofa watching films with his partner Gemma Atkinson, a former actress whom he met on Strictly in 2017, and their two young children. I also cooked a Sunday roast, he added, smiling. If it sounds like a wholehearted embrace of British domestic life, he is quick to point out that it didn't come naturally at first. Cultural differences, small miscommunications, and the everyday logistics of living in another country have all played their part. He remembers one moment when Northerner Atkinson suggested they had tea. I went and made a cup of tea. She was like, "What are you doing?" he recalls. It turns out she meant dinner. Such moments became the starting point for Lost in Translation, a podcast the couple launched to talk candidly about family life and the small but funny frictions that come with blending cultures. We just try to be ourselves, says Marquez. It's very real to the point that sometimes I think we should maybe put more of a filter on it. Does he ever regret putting things out there? You have to be careful what you say doesn't create backlash. Once you say it, you can't change it, and people who are not nice can attack you. For the most part, he tries not to listen to such noises. There was a time I was annoyed by a comment and I wanted to reply when someone said to me, "Do you have their phone number?" I said, "No." So they said, "Why are you wasting your energy? If they know you, they'll call you. If they don't have your number, they're not important to you." That sense of perspective has been shaped in part by family life. He describes parenting Mia, 6, and Thiago, 2, as the greatest joy. The hardest part, he says, is absence. Dance tours often mean being away for weeks at a time. You miss little day-to-day moments and even milestones, and you don't get those back. It is a kind of distance he has long been familiar with. Marquez left Spain at 18 to pursue dancing in the US before moving to the UK. There is plenty he misses about his native country, the weather, the food, and given that last year he was appointed to the coveted role of a judge on Spain's answer to Strictly, Bailando con las Estrellas, I wonder whether he would consider moving the family there.
No, he says, shaking his head. I'm used to the rhythm of life here, he explains. I don't like in Spain that slow pace. Welcome news for Strictly fans, then. Over the years, the professional dancers have become as familiar to viewers as the celebrities they partner. Yet there are still misconceptions about the show. People think everything is so glamorous and glittery, sparkly and joyful, but it is also hard work, he says, for the celebs and for the dancers. With long-standing presenters Tess Daly and Claudia Winkleman stepping away, there's been renewed speculation about what comes next. Does he still feel the show has a strong future? I never know what the future holds, he admits. People say, you'll be back this year, and I'm like, I don't know, we find out later, we wait, like everyone else.
And to conclude this additional outlook, we're going down to Gloucester with Dave, where he visits the cathedral and Beatrix Potter's Tailor of Gloucester shop and museum.
The Nostalgics are a singing group I belong to at the Avenue Bowling Club, Gaveston Road, Cowden, on a Wednesday morning, 10:30 to 12:30. And they also have some lovely outings. One of them was to Gloucester, which I went around with member Jenny. Right, hello, I'm on a trip with the Nostalgics to Gloucester, and we're in Gloucester Cathedral. So I'm speaking to Mike, so what job do you do here?
I'm the day chaplain, so it's part of my job to welcome people to the cathedral. Sometimes they want to pray or to talk about something that's on their mind, or they just want to know where the toilets are, and I'm here to help whatever they want.
Excellent. Do you think you can talk about the cathedral, briefly?
Yes, there was originally a wooden cathedral here, which was built in the 7th century.
Yeah.
The present building is about 700 years old.
Yeah.
We have a king buried here, Edward II.
Yes.
And this is the last place when a king was crowned outside of London, when Henry III was crowned here.
Okay.
And there is a window here dedicated to that event, which people like to look at.
Okay, thank you very much indeed.
My great pleasure.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you.
My pleasure.
I used to be a volunteer.
Now, right near the front of the cathedral, there's a mirror where you can see the roof above us. It is absolutely fantastic. You have found an inscription here, haven't you?
Yes, I have. It's God is love, and those who live in love live in God, and God lives in them.
Right, so here we have Edward II's tomb. The remains of Edward II lie here. He was an unpopular king who is thought to have been brutally murdered in 1327. Yeah, that was in Berkeley Castle. Now, Edward II's tomb is quite grand. It has got a kind of cathedral around his tomb, isn't it?
Yeah,
tall pillars all around it, and three archways on either side. And right at his feet, he's lying down, he has got a lion there.
Yeah.
Right, so after Edward II died, they had an extension on the cathedral, the East Cloister, an architectural masterpiece. You are standing in one of the most famous cloisters in the world, a marvel of medieval design, and believed to be the earliest example of the style of architecture known as fan vaulting, a breakthrough in Gothic architecture that began right here in Gloucester. Yes, and Gloucester Cathedral was used for the filming of Harry Potter. So what went on here, by the way, in the cloister?
The monks would have used this to discuss the business of the abbey.
Yeah.
And picture a big long refectory table, lots and lots of monks around it. Really beautiful place here for the meeting.
Not far from Gloucester Cathedral is the Tailor of Gloucester shop. The Tailor of Gloucester is a book written by Beatrix Potter, in which she says the shop was in College Court, where it actually is. So it was lovely to go in there, and it was quite magical, really.
Okay, here's the Tailor of Gloucester's shop and museum that Beatrix Potter wrote a book about.
Really nice.
Okay, there's a shop here selling little cups and saucers and plates from Beatrix Potter, pictures. And here we have a little living room of Beatrix Potter. And there's a little... There's a little cartoon showing with a mouse.
Special instructions to clear us all out. There are now four kittens.
Oh no!
And the cat has killed the canary.
Oh my goodness!
And here's is
a
and here is a lovely stuffed toy of Peter Rabbit with his blue jacket. And a carrot in his hand.
Oh,
and his paw.
The little mouse was on the screen in Beatrix Potter. And yes. I've just bought a little mouse in the cathedral. And there was the cat that killed the canary. And we had the cat that killed the canary.
You did?
Yes.
Wow.
And we thought they were selling us birds that weren't any good. Because then we got a zebra finch.
Yeah.
And he finished up the same way, and we found out it was the cat jumping on at the cage.
So you had a cat that killed a canary.
Yes.
Oh, sad. Oh, wow, there are some wonderful things here.
You know, it's so funny. It's all things that I've got in my lounge.
Yeah.
You know, it's... I've got the ducks. I've got...
Oh, yes.
The cat, all of the little animals, and I've never realised with its connection with Beatrix Potter.
Oh, that's that is a model here with beautiful with the fox talking to Jemima Puddle Duck.
Yeah.
And there's a waistcoat here, the Tailor of Gloucester's waistcoat.
Beautiful.
Faithfully recreated in 1980 by the Gloucestershire Federation of Women's Institutes. And one of the members actually even cut up her wedding dress to supply the satin in which this marvellous embroidery has been worked. Now, Jenny and I are seated on the bench at the moment, overlooking a canal. So, did you enjoy your day in Gloucester?
Yes, very much, thank you. All of it was lovely. We've got to Gloucester Keys now, so perfect day. Loved it.
Well, now, we normally go along to a group called the Nostalgics. We take it in turns, so we sing songs together, don't we? And we sometimes sing duets. That's what do you like about the Nostalgics?
Everything. Social company, not being inhibited to get up and sing, because everybody encourages each other. It's just really good, yeah?
And that's all from our day out to Gloucester. Thank you very much. It's bye for me, Dave Muxton.
Bye for me, Jenny.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Dave's Gloucester weekend ends this outlook. So for me, Nigel Hewin, and all the team, it's goodbye until next week.